Today I'm talking to David Zeiger. He's the director of the documentary Sir No Sir, a displaced films and BBC production about the GI movement against the war in Vietnam. It consists in part of interviews with veterans explaining the reasons they protested against the war, or in some cases even defected. Hundreds went to prison and thousands into exile, and by 1971 it had, in the words of one colonel, infested the entire armed services. Yet today, few people know about the movement against war in Vietnam. The film was completed in 2005 and won the Audience Award at the Los Angeles Film Festival, as well as the Golden Starfish Award for Best Documentary in 2005. David joins me on the phone. How did you actually get in touch with the older generation of dissident troops that you talked to in the movie?
Well, I was involved with a lot of them during, you know, back during the Vietnam War. I wasn't a veteran, but I was a civilian supporter of the GI movement. I worked for about 3 years in a little town in Texas just outside of Fort Hood, in a coffee house that was part of a kind of a network of coffee houses that helped support soldiers who were organizing against the war and kind of give them legal advice and help with printing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I knew some of these, a lot of these guys. When I decided to make the film, I started with the people that I knew and just kept going deeper and deeper and trying to track down a lot of people that I knew existed, but I didn't know exactly where they were.
So you were involved in running a cafe called the Olio Strut?
Yeah, it's we profile it in the film. Yeah, this was there was a network of coffee houses that were set up in the U.S. and actually overseas a lot in Germany and in Asia. And these were staffed by veterans and by civilians who were supporting the soldiers who were organizing against the war and against racism in the military and that kind of stuff. So, this is a story that I was very familiar with. But you know, over the last 30, 35 years, the story of what had happened in the military really got buried, and a lot of the guys had kind of disappeared and just kind of, you know, gone back into their lives.
Yeah, you do describe on the film poster and the byline that it's the suppressed story of the GI movement to end the war in Vietnam. Can you just give me some idea of how far off the mainstream agenda the story has been, and I guess how the documentary has certainly placed it back into the centre of how people may envision an anti-war movement? And like, where did that sort of conservative revisionism around Vietnam come from, and do you think that the actual anti-war movement itself has lost the sense of the role of soldiers as participants in an anti-war movement? I mean, I'm speaking of the contemporary movement there.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. This story was deeply buried after the war, and for a variety of reasons. I mean, first of all, just to give you some perspective, the movement inside the military against the war by 1971 had become so widespread that the military had essentially, it's not that they had given into it, but they had really no choice but to pull troops out of Vietnam and to try to make big changes. They did a survey in 1971 that showed that over half the soldiers in the military had engaged in some kind of protest against the war. And it was very public, it was very out there, it was covered in the media, there were huge events, there were mutinies. And after the war, I think, you know, for one thing, the people who had been involved in it and the anti-war movement, there was kind of a several years of people just wanting to kind of move on. And so it opened up the field to a lot of revisionism about what had actually happened, and starting particularly in the early 80s under the Reagan administration, the reality of what had gone on in the military was replaced with a string of films from Hollywood that showed, you know, that presented the war as being, you know, loyal soldiers who came home and were betrayed by the American people who had opposed the war and who turned their backs on the soldiers. And turning your back on the war and opposing the war got turned into, turning your back on the soldiers and betraying the soldiers. And there were over 200 films made since Vietnam about the war, and none of them, until my film, ever said a word, except one that another one that was suppressed at the time, ever said a word about opposition to the war inside the military. And it was some stuff about veterans, but nothing about the organizing inside the military. So this thing was so, and it was, you know, the idea that was replaced it was that the myth that was very widespread in this country in the last 10 years that, you know, soldiers came home and anti-war activists and hippies were waiting at the airport and spat on them and threw stuff at them. I mean, and none of this is true. It's in fact, you know, there was never a verifiable incident of something like that happening, but it became so widespread that most people in the, I think it's safe to say most people in the anti-war, you know, movement today in this country believe that during Vietnam the soldiers were betrayed by the anti-war movement, and it has a big chilling effect. It kind of gives the idea that, well, if you're too active against war, or if you accuse the war of being genocidal or targeting civilians, that you're, by definition, you're targeting or vilifying the soldiers, and none of that is true. And it's kind of bringing out that this is not, in fact, what happened in Vietnam has a big impact on how soldiers today look at what's going on, as well as how a lot of civilians see it.
You sort of talked about, I guess, the Rambo effect in Hollywood movies. I mean, the troop returns home and gets rejected by civilian society. Have you seen any films about the recent Iraq conflict, and how do you think, are they dealing with it in any sort of different manner than how Hollywood dealt with it during the Vietnam conflict or after?
Well, I think, I've seen a lot of the films that have come out, and I think one thing that for one in the documentary world has been more of an attempt to kind of honestly get at the reality of what's going on the ground. You know, there's this film The Ground Truth and some other films that have shown the opposition that's going on inside, that's growing inside the military. And one film of the ones kind of that started coming out of Hollywood, I've heard that, I have not seen Redacted, but I've heard it's a very powerful
it's
film.
The Palmer's movie.
Because it does kind of portray how American troops have been just kind of essentially unleashed on the people, and the kind of atrocities that can create. Even the tendency, though, in Hollywood and just generally, is still in this country, the focus is so deeply on American servicemen that the issue that everyone wants to deal with is what effect is this war having on our troops, and so much of the kind of horrendous nature of the war in terms of the, you know, hundreds of thousands of civilians killed, the occupation, the brutality, all of that gets buried under the question that keeps being put on the agenda here, which is, well, what's, you know, is this good, you know, is this hurting American troops? Which is, I think, again, a result of the pretty successful propaganda campaign about Vietnam that went on in the 1980s and 90s. And, you know, and the war, you know, and several people in my film point out that the Vietnam War was not about the American troops. It was about what was going on in Vietnam and what the United States was doing to Vietnam. And I think that's true of Iraq. The Iraq War is not about the American troops. It's about the United States invading and occupying a country. And it's interesting how things get kind of twisted around here.
The GI movement against the Vietnam War probably gets more recognition within the military than those outside of it, in the sense that people talk about the Powell Doctrine, or the sort of the military being forced to create an all-volunteer army, you know, with the belief that the draft allowed a serious mutinous movement to cohere within the military. Do you think it's possible to speak of an economic draft today, or how do you think the GI movement may have actually revolutionized the military itself, in terms of how they go about recruiting and what sort of people they bring in?
Well, I think the interesting thing is that in a lot of ways, eliminating the draft more, I think, spoke to the civilian movement than the GI movement, because, you know, the draft became a real focus of the student movement and it sparked, you know, a lot more widespread protests, I think, than they wanted. Inside the military, although the draft had a big, you know, role in the movement, really what sparked it and what drove it were volunteers, were people who had gone into the military thinking that they were doing the right thing, that this was, you know, they were going to defend America, just as their, you know, their uncle did in Korea and their father did in World War II and their, you know, their grandfather did in World War I. You know, how much of that is mythology is another question, but there was a sense of betrayal among the troops, and really the troops who felt the most betrayed were the troops who had volunteered. And in many ways, that kind of speaks to today, the fact that there is an all-volunteer army, and but although it is, a lot of it is an economic draft, and that's one of the things that's happened is there's a very high level of desertion going on right now, which is both political and, you know, an expression of this is not what I joined the military for. But the politics of soldiers feeling that, or, you know, seeing that they've been lied to, that they, you know, were told this, you know, we're going over there to defend democracy, we're going over there to, you know, to help the people of Iraq, just as they said about Vietnam, and seeing that this is not at all what's going on, that betrayal is what causes the turmoil in the military more than people being kind of press-ganged into it. So I think there have been a lot of changes. The military did a lot to try to diffuse the potential for a GI movement again, as they've been doing that for a long time, and it's not just the draft. They tried to make the military more appealing. They, you know, they put McDonald's in, you know, at the bases, and do things that, you know, kind of little stuff that they think are going to make it more, feel more like home, weirdly enough. And they also try to create a stronger sense of unity among the troops, you know, that you're there fighting for your buddies. You're not, you may not be fighting for America, but you're fighting for your buddies, to try to, you know, undercut opposition inside. But you know, the reality is the reality, and that's what is, I think, is driving a lot of soldiers to deeply question and oppose the war today.
In the movie, you highlight that there were 300 underground newspapers.
Yes.
And I mean, that really does testify to what a remarkable network the kind of the anti-war GI movement really was. How was this done under the very nose of the command structure? I mean, there must have been an awful lot of work involved. And do you think that the internet could be put to similar use today, or do you even see any echoes of that? I mean, producing a newspaper is a lot harder than producing a website, say.
Well, it's interesting. First of all, the underground newspapers in the military were a fascinating kind of thing, because they were, considered to be illegal by the military, and there were, especially when they first started coming out in 68 and 69, there were all kinds of attempts by the military to court-martial people who were putting them out, the court-martial people who were distributing them, you know, both for, you know, the charge of subverting the military, and for, you know, kind of trumped up charges and drugs and that kind of thing. But it became so widespread, and people were so creative in how they were getting them out and getting them on bases, that eventually the military really, they couldn't do anything about it. And I think it was around 1970, 71, there was a memo sent out by the Pentagon basically outlining what is quote acceptable end quote, and essentially accepting the existence of these papers and trying to control them without outright suppressing them, as they'd been doing in the early part of the war, and the difference, it's a funny thing, you know, the internet's it can create, I mean, the GI newspapers created a lot of a sense of a community, you know, a community of opposition, and that was great, and that was like a real kind of physical, tactile kind of thing, you know, centering around this newspaper. Guys would get together, and you'd have to write the articles, you'd have to figure out how to paste it up, you'd have to figure out how to get it printed, and all of that kind of, and how to distribute it. The internet, on the one hand, kind of eliminates the need for all that stuff, because you can, you know, you can create your blogs, you can do whatever you can to get the stuff up there, and you're instantly in contact with the world. But on the other hand, there's kind of an isolation to it, you know, because everyone's sitting at their terminal doing this, and it doesn't, so far at least, it hasn't kind of helped build that sense of actual, you know, a community of opposition. I think it is in a certain sense, but not in the sense of the kind of physical opposition that it's going to take, you know, to really to do something about the war. So it's, I don't know, it's both a boon and a curse in some ways.
I guess just on that question, yeah. It's an interesting way to end an interview for a website like indiemedia.ie.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks, Rock.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thanks for calling.